Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on. Bigger. We've done that thing. Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let them on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
Understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
Take him, Bowson. I mean that. Take him.
Alexa, what's the weather going to be like today?
No, I haven't got it. I've had a busy week, and I didn't get round to getting my Alexa just yet.
Oh, right.
Actually, to be fair, I went into Fnac as well the other day.
Why am I not surprised?
I just thought I couldn't have anyone else talking to me. But I will get the Alexa before the season's finished.
No, you won't.
I will.
No, you won't. Anyway, welcome, wherever in the world it is that you're listening. We do appreciate you joining us. This is the Keys and Grey podcast with me, Richard Keys.
And with me, Andy Gray.
Recently divorced from Alexa.
Oh, I never get divorced because I never bought her in the first place.
Yeah, that's
so
fair.
You know.
Yeah. So. Patrick Clivert, of course, was our guest last week when this subject first came up about Alexa. If you haven't, then please go back and take a listen. In fact, I mean, I think it's fair to say, Andy, we spent the week in the company of legends. I noticed a picture you put up on Instagram with a feed of ourselves with Arsene Wenger.
Yes.
And Marcel Desailly. Yeah. Mm. What a lovely hour that was. Just sitting.
Fantastic.
Talking football. Mm. And it will air on beIN Sports, of course. And I hope YouTube.
YouTube. I'm told YouTube by the beginning of June.
Good. Anyway, we have another huge name joining us this week. And I do mean.
That's huge.
Not Mikhailichenko, which is the original big name. We've signed a big, remember that?
Alexei Mikhailichenko.
Yes, we've signed a big name. We do genuinely have a big name.
Correct.
Who carries a big name.
Yes, that's fair.
All right?
That's fair.
So that's for later. We, of course, were part of the social media blackout that the football family came together for last week in protest at online abuse and bullying. What an irony that then a riot ensued.
Yes.
In Manchester, in the middle of all that. Anyway, it is and was very worthwhile, and I hope the big platforms do take note. Mm-hmm. I hope it makes a difference, and it was good to see football, I think, coming together for
Sadly, that very good cause. I think not, GZ. There will always, and unless it changes dramatically, there will always be fools.
Right.
And I hear that Raheem Sterling, day after it was back on again, was abused online. So there we go.
I can tell you that the day before it was back on, I was
you were
abused.
Oh, well, there you go.
Online.
So it's worked, treat. Yeah. No, it's hard to, you know, you can't implement it. There's always going to be these idiots there if they're hiding behind keyboards, unless they're out in front and you know who it is. I'm sorry, people are going to get abused.
I keep saying it. If you want to join a social media platform, you need identification, driving license, passport, something similar, and then you can't hide. Anyway, if you are a new sub-listener, do subscribe, share, and leave a review. We're available on all platforms. You can ask your smart speaker to find us as well.
Yep.
You just say, Alexa.
Yes.
Play Keys and Grey, the podcast.
God, that's easy, isn't it?
And other.
Other.
forms of communication, communicating platforms, whatever you call them.
I don't know.
Are also available. You can follow us on Twitter.
I'm just
and Insta at Keys and Greypod, AMD. Yeah. Now, the domestic seasons, of course, are all concluding. The European football now has its finalists. We have the Euros to look forward to. There's no shortage of talking points and debate over the coming months. So do please subscribe and don't miss a thing. What we try to do here is to offer an antidote to some of the hassle that has preceded us. Coming together on a Friday here in Qatar. Interesting spike in listening this past week. I am the capital of my island. These are the clues to the...
I'm the capital of my island, yeah, go on.
...place that you need to identify. You can see blue mountains and sample my coffee. I am the birthplace of one of the world's top musical artists. I am Kingston in Jamaica.
Yeah. I was going to say the
So Jamaica. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time of the day it is that you're listening in Jamaica and you found us. It's great. Well, it would now, but we're not posting now,
are we? Of
course,
we're not live, are we? I forgot about that. Yeah. I was going to say good morning.
Freddie Ljungberg claims Arsenal fans may now regret how they treated Arsene Wenger in his final few years in charge.
There's a belter.
Note to Piers Morgan particularly.
And others.
But I mean, Piers is back on it now. Arteta's got to go now.
Is that?
Your thoughts?
My thoughts are very much the same as yours. I mean, I think that Arsene was hard done by in many ways. They thought they could get someone in who had been with Pep Guardiola for a couple of years, understudy to Pep, and tap into his genius. Now, he may become a Pep Guardiola. He may become a hugely successful coach. But, and this is where I do agree with you, having given it much thought, I think... it was a massive club to give a fledgling manager to take control of with no history, with no experience of running something like that. And maybe it has come home to roost.
Ancelotti was the man.
That's every chance.
Everton swooped and did a brilliant piece of business. I'm not saying that from their point of view they made the wrong appointment. Not at all. But Arsenal should have... done what they did and bring in someone that knows his way around a big club.
I'm not giving them away, but our guest should have an opinion on this.
Yes. And
a good opinion.
Absolutely.
From a strong position. But listen, I don't know what they do with Mikel Arteta now, Richard. He's getting terrible stick. First time in 25 years that they haven't or they won't be playing European football next year. I mean, that's not something to be. Listen, let me tell you though, that's not only something Mikel Arteta won't be proud of. I think every Arsenal player should be looking around and thinking, have I done enough?
No.
Should I have done a bit more?
No.
I also think, you know, it's great having a bunch of kids that are fantastic footballers, but it's really dangerous unless you're a top team, chucking them all in at the same time and saying, these will be great, these kids. We can rely on these kids.
They don't care these days. And in support of my argument, I offer you Eden Hazard. What was he thinking post-match at Stamford Bridge? He's actually had to issue an apology. I'm sorry, I've read lots of opinions about me today. It was not my intention to offend the Real Madrid fans, he says. It's always been my dream to play for Real Madrid and I came here to win. Season isn't over and together we must now battle all La Liga, a la Madrid. Well, I'm sorry. If you really felt that way, Eden, you wouldn't have been munching on your buns and your cakes and everything else you've been talking about this week, that you have trouble resisting.
Hollow apology,
when
I'm
you're
afraid.
Away from the club. And
hollow apology. That has been a disastrous signing for them. And listen, I know players know each other and I know players come off the football pitch sometimes. But you don't, at the end of a semi-final, when you've been toughed out of the Champions League with one to go, you just don't do that. You don't come back 5 kilos overweight when the club have just spent 95 million on you and just turn around and say, well, in my off-season, I do what I want. No, you don't.
No.
You're a professional footballer. Take a look at Cristiano Ronaldo. Does he do what he wants? No. That's why he's still one of the best at the age he's at.
One last time then against Manchester United in the final. Just one last time. Good evening.
It won't be as well. It's a certainty. Good evening. He's done well, hasn't he? He must have loved it. I always think of those things. And yes, he would have been so sore at being toughed out of Arsenal as quickly as he was. He took them to the final, didn't he? Yeah, Chelsea beat them in the final of this trophy. So he didn't exactly fail in that respect. He achieved more than Mikel has done. And yet he was tuffed unceremoniously out of the club. Thank you very much. See you. And he's come back. And what he's done with Villarreal to take them to the first ever European final, absolutely sensational.
I'm not quite sure who follows who. Whether it's me always quoting Sammy, Martin Samuel, or he's picking up on my Twitter account and quoting me. But here's one that leapt out today, because it is something I talked about earlier in the week, and it is something that you and I have talked about since, as Mourinho would say, minute one of this farce. West Ham have had five of their last eight reds overturned, have won six of their seven appeals against dismissals. Not all were in the VAR era, says Sammy. One dates back to a match with Liverpool in 2015, but two are from this last 3 months. This is not the fault of VAR, he says, but of those applying it, if the referees are not good enough, there is no system that will work. On this occasion, the Vestergaard sending off, match referee saw it.
Yep.
VAR saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Match day commander saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Although they say they don't get involved, they do.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Riley, who's probably hovering in the background, saw it, and they all agreed it was a red. And yet it goes to appeal at the FA in front of a panel that generally, they never tell you, player, coach, probably a former referee.
Okay.
Now that for me is telling, player,
coach,
and coach.
Yeah, absolutely.
These guys have been and continue to be a shambles, and I've said it time and time and time again. The days when we had world-class officials taking charge of finals of important competitions, World Cup, European Championships, they are long since gone. And Mike Riley is reduced to a laughing stock around
Europe. I'll tell you what I enjoyed in the midweek. I don't know if you would have noticed that I did, because I watched a lot of the football in midweek, is when a lot of the foreign referees are reffing now in Europe. You know how the thing that really cheeses me off a lot and pisses me off? Am I allowed to say that?
Yes, you are, because we control this podcast.
One of the things, as you know, pisses me off is like when players are kind of protecting the ball and people come up behind them and they fall on top of the ball for no apparent reason, the referee gives a free kick time after time after time. In midweek time after time, players were trying it, and time after time, the referees were just waving play on, not interested. And I just thought to myself, brilliant, well done, so refreshing. You know, particularly the English sides, because it happens a lot in the Premier League. I think it's almost like a pandemic, I hate to use that word right now, of players falling over, getting free kicks, referees just buy it. But in Europe this week, they didn't get them. People were falling over like they would get a free kick in the Premier League. Referees are just going, play on, let's get on with it. And I was thinking, well done. That is very good.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you something.
Go on.
Can I ask you a question? Is this a great week for English football, or has it been a great week for Premier League football?
Well, I think the Premier League is back where it wanted to be, isn't it? Front and centre.
How many, Englishmen started?
Well, the English, no. The Premier League.
Oh, that's what I thought.
Yes.
See, I think it's an advert for the Premier League. It's strength.
Absolutely.
You know, it's cosmopolitan feel with people from all over the world playing it. I think, if I'm not wrong, of the four teams that got selected, 14 of the 44 players, 14 of the 44 were English.
English or British?
English. I didn't count Kieran Tierney.
Paris Saint-Germain claim referee Bjorn Kuipers told two of their players to fuck off during the loss City on Tuesday.
Can you see that in a podcast?
Martin Samuel makes the point. Just two? What admirable restraint.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
Isn't it just?
It's a fair point.
Really? And something else that we've discussed, and I can't think it isn't going to be the case that the Champions League final is moved. If not to Wembley, Aston Villa have actually suggested that Villa Park would make a very good venue, and I agree. I mean, why not? It's halfway between both.
And if you're only going to have 25,000, I think it's 25,000 that we're talking about in the Atatürk in Istanbul. If you're having 20,000 at Wembley, it's nothing. You won't see them. If you have 20,000 at Villa Park, that's an atmosphere.
Yes. And why would you transport that number of supporters anyway to a country with COVID rates 12 times higher than they are in the UK
right
now?
Well, it's a red list. You'd need to come back and quarantine for 10 days at your own expense in a hotel in England.
Yes. I just think it would make all sorts of sense to say, now, listen, okay. And you and I, if you remember our experience of the Ataturk, it's in the middle of nowhere. There were no public transport systems then. Maybe there are now, but getting those people moved around in itself is a major problem.
Richard, you can't have a major final, the major club final in world football, in a city with a beautiful city that is, you know, it's a fantastic city. Let me say that right away.
Yes.
But you cannot have a major final there when it's under lockdown right now until I think about the 17th of May.
No, it makes no sense.
It comes out of lockdown and you're supposed to be ready for everything. No, sorry.
Makes no sense whatsoever. Ed Sheeran, 4-time Grammy winner, will have the name of his upcoming tour across Ipswich Town shirts next season. Yeah,
he's sponsoring
Ipswich Town, his favourite football club.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
And this is before we introduce our guests. The football. This is the article here today. I found this in the Times. The footballer Andrea Pirlo once described the approach to the penalty spot. This is for a shootout as endless, a terrible walk into one's fears. Of course, he's regarded as one of the better takers, I think, of penalties. But scientists monitoring the brains of footballers while they take penalties now confirm the intuition of fans players miss when they overthink things. This is... You're looking at me blankly. This is a scientific study that's cost fortunes. Now, I could have told you that.
Yeah.
Those who choked tended to activate areas of the brain associated with long-term planning, suggesting they were considering the consequences of their actions. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yes.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Perfect sense. I didn't need to spend a lot of money find that out.
The researchers say that the findings support neural efficiency theory, that the idea that certain regions of the brain must be switched on and others off to perform under pressure. Well, I think we know that too. We talk about putting things out of your mind.
Correct.
Don't we?
Yeah. But how do they know that?
Well, because...
How do they judge it? As far as I remember on a penalty shootout, I've never seen a player on a penalty shootout walk up to take it with all these tapes around his head and they're testing his brain movement.
The study published in the journal Frontiers in Computer Science used a technique called functional near infrared. Spectroscopy.
Ah, I know. They fire
the 22 volunteers
head.
Wore a tight-fitting cap with sensors that measure oxygen levels in different parts of the brain before they were put under pressure in that same scenario.
Hold on a minute. No, what do you mean in that same scenario? They've got 22 volunteers on a practice ground to walk up and take a penalty, and you're saying that's the same as a Champions League final, the World Cup final, or a European... No. I'm sorry. give us a break. I'm sorry. That's ridiculous. Now, if you're testing them as they walk up from the penalty spot in the Champions League final this year, I would say, well done, boys. Now, that is a test.
With tight caps.
I know, skull caps and all these wires leading out from behind them. Hold on a minute. But your wires come out. Plug them back in.
I think the conclusion only really, as I say, underlines what we actually knew. Which is it's probably a very lonely walk.
It is. It must be. I didn't do it, but I mean, you know, it wasn't in when I played that shootout. But yes, it will be. It's the one word that I would say that I haven't heard is pressure. Mm. You have to deal with the pressure. The consequences. I get that because as you walk up there, if you're suddenly in a shootout and it's sudden death all of a sudden, you've got the ball and you're walking up there, you would find it really hard. You need to be really special. Not to think of the consequences.
We all call it, don't we, as an individual walks to the spot. We know, and I think at least half of the time we're right.
Yeah, about that. But that would be right.
Yeah.
Because it's going to go one way or the
other. Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
Oh, no, that's down the middle now, so there's a trio of options.
But you can see he's missing.
Yeah.
He's missing.
Yes.
Look in his eyes. He's missing.
Well, you've always said with a short run-up, with two-step run-up, you always go, he's missing.
But just on that subject... back with Arsene Wenger, who's been with us here in Qatar over the last 7-10 days or so. And I put it to him, the idea I've had for a long, long time, Andy, that we take a shootout at both ends of a stadium.
What did he say?
He likes it.
Yeah.
Because we've got enough people on the pitch to be able to do that so that you don't actually want, in a final, more often than not, it's a split stadium.
Of course it is.
Supporters from one team or the other.
Either end.
Mm-hmm. So one team has to have an advantage the way we do it right now. Whereas if you split it and took penalties at both ends, you would halve the time needed for the shootout anyway. But I think that the unfairness of having to stand in front of a wall of opposition fans would also be negated, wouldn't it?
Yeah. We have two linesmen. One could go either side. We have a fourth official who could adjudicate in the penalty area. The referee, the other one. Not a problem. Who'd keep count?
Well, we keep count. Yeah. I don't... Well, it's not difficult, is it? Come on. Right. Let's invite our guest to join us. Unusual career in so much as that he didn't have a playing record.
No, a senior playing record, no.
At all?
Played as a kid, surely. Well, must have done.
Stop playing at youth level.
That's what I mean. Played as a kid. Not a professional career.
Was spotted by, not the first, but spotted by and engaged after a conversation in Porto with Sir Bobby Robson. Has worked with Jose Mourinho.
Yes.
Has managed two clubs in the Premier League.
In London.
With varying degrees of success in London.
In the capital.
Has delivered, when you look at his record, virtually everywhere he's been. I mean, at 72 points, they're at that time record total for Tottenham. Didn't deliver Champions League football, but most seasons that total
there.
Has
You're
done.
You're giving a big clue there.
Yeah. I think it's time we said good morning. 11 o'clock Portugal as I look at the watch. Good morning to André Villas Boas.
Well done.
André, how are you, my friend?
Good.
Yeah.
Very good. Back home in Porto, taking care of the family. So doing the bits and pieces you can't do when you're coaching.
Yeah. I was going to say, André, enjoying the rest? Did you need a little break or are you itchy? Are you twitching to get back in again?
Well, always itching to get back. The only thing that has happened recently is that the market has really changed now for coaches. I think there is a much more influx of coaches around. I think also, guys, related to the amount of expenditure by clubs to dismiss coaches.
Yeah.
So this has forced clubs to bet on more and more new people. And so for the first time in a few years, I think we see an influx of coaches and we see top coaches going to different places. So, much more competitive than it was a few years back. I think 10, 15 years back. So much more competitive where was almost like a closed circuit. So now let's see. The good thing about my market is that I'm very, very open to go elsewhere, Mexico, Brazil, Japan. So I'm keen on those experiences as well. So let's see. Let's see where I end up.
Well, it's something I'd like to talk about, Russia and China, André Wade, of course. You've also worked. But what I didn't realise, and I should have done, is that you actually have English heritage, don't you? Grandmother was from Stockport. So your English language has never been an issue for you.
Yeah, it was always an advantage. Also in my upbringing, being able to speak English so quickly. My grandmother forced us to speak English with her.
Good girl.
Excellent. That's one of our better decisions, I think, Hungary.
We used to spend Easter with her, with all my cousins. So we were about 15 of us. And it was really a good time to connect with her. So my English roots are very, very deep, and it was a great tool for me. Because I was able quickly to manage the language and really help me.
But your coaching career is entirely different to most that generally played. You didn't. Can you share with us, and I'm sure you're probably bored of telling the story, but if you could, how it was that you got on the ladder to the career that you've had?
Well, it was, sometimes it looks like it's when luck meets destiny, more or less.
Yeah.
I was finishing school and I was going into journalism. And I have this encounter with Sir Bobby in my garage, also in the apartment block that we shared. And because I was an avid Porto fan, I asked Saboli why my big idol Domingos was not playing. Can you imagine? Something that a normal coach will tell somebody to piss off.
Yeah, Bobby, exactly. Not Saboli.
Not Saboli. So I was very, very lucky that he had, he gave this young boy the margin to explain, and he invited me into the training ground to see some training sessions. And at that time, I was just like living a dream. I was just close to the players that I loved, close to my idols. I was not thinking of starting a career, far away from that. The fact is that Saboli then put me into doing statistics for him, mm-hmm. because he loved his game by the flanks and his crosses and crosses mm-hmm. with finishing and entries into the attacking third, things like this. So I used to count this for him. And from then on, my interest grew more and more. Saboli helped me to enlist in the FA coaching courses and the SFA coaching courses, because I was too young to be enlisted. So I think at that time he spoke to Charlie Hughes, which yes. was
it's a name that sends a shiver down everybody's spine.
Charlie Hughes, yes.
Charlie Hughes, and he spoke to Andy Roxburgh, of course, for Scotland.
Yeah.
And I managed to get in on those courses, and it was from then on. Of course, then I went to start. I started coaching Porto's young kids, and then I went up the ladder in Porto till Mourinho joined Porto, and he invited me to the scouting position.
How did he find out about you, Andre? How did Jose find out about this young, keen, ambitious coach? How did he find out?
Because Jose was, of course, with Saboli as assistant and translator at that time. And Saboli used to pick up Jose on the way to the training. And when I was in the car, I was sitting back and fantastic. The other two were in front. Yeah, and funny enough, at that time, Jose was very, very close to an uncle of mine.
Really?
We got acquainted very, very quickly. And so he knew me from that time. And that's why he invited me to the position later.
So when
not only because of that, of course, I hope that I produced some quality.
Yeah. So, I was just thinking, Andre, when you were sitting in the back of that car, and here you have Sir Bobby Robson and Jose Mourinho debating football, did you ever say, excuse me, guys, I don't agree with that. I think you're wrong.
No, not really. Sometimes Saboli asked me about this or that.
Yeah.
But I think just to comfort basically his choices.
When you went on your own, do you think you learned more from Sir Bob or from Jose?
I think football-wise, I had. I think my great explosion was my being assistant to Jose.
Yeah, yeah.
Scouting the game, the amount of games that I saw, the amount of leagues we were in, from Portugal to England to Italy. I used to see each opponent five times. I had to decipher the game, and then whenever I had time, I go into the training sessions. Jose allowed me to be there, mostly in Italy. I think the great explosion of my knowledge, if you can say like that, was with Jose, no doubt about it. With Saboli, I was too young.
Yeah.
It was funny because Saboli, sometimes he used to give me exercise to do. For example, like you have five balls, you have 10 players, you do a shooting exercise or a passing exercise, and I would have to deliver the next day. So I was that young. I still have those papers with me. It was funny because recently Lady Elsie Robson did recently. I think we're speaking about 7-8 years ago. She did an encounter in the Algarve for the Saboli Foundation, and I gave her one of those homeworks that I did for him. And she was very, very thrilled because I've kept them, I cherish them, and my memories with Sir Bobby, and it means a lot to me as well.
I'm wondering why we didn't know any of this. These are fabulous stories, Andre. I mean, when you went on your own, you must have thought, what's the problem with this coaching business? I mean, Academica, yes, but I'm thinking more Porto. You win a trophy inside 2 months, beating Benfica, which must have been particularly popular. You ultimately win the Europa League. You sail through a season unbeaten. I mean, you must have been saying to yourself, this is easy.
Yeah. What's the problem?
It was a problem after in Chelsea because I had too much success too soon. Do you understand? The experience. I mean, we won the league undefeated. We won the Europa League. Not only we won with style. We played well. So the learning experiences from Chelsea were very gratifying in terms of development of my career. The experience of failure, the experience of difficulty. Mm-hmm. It was a great time. It's now 10 years, going to be 10 years now in the 18th of May that we won the Europa League in Dublin.
Is it really? Wow.
And it was a great time because I was born a Porto fan. And because I was born a Porto fan, it was also an advantage for me, because I could sense everything. Basically, I had the same feeling one day I spoke with Guardiola in Qatar when he was there with Bayern Munich in the winter training, and we were sharing this experience when he was as Barcelona coach. We know how people react, we know what people feel, we know the environment, we know the people that are on the youth level, we know the people that are marketing. So it is that heavy in terms of responsibility. It was a difficult family time for me because I almost didn't exist as a father and as a husband. I was completely out. Mm. It was 24 hours responsibility over my destiny of Porto. But we managed to went through that season so well, and it brought special memories. Of course, I probably paid a price for it after in Chelsea.
But you wouldn't. Well, you wouldn't have swapped it, and you couldn't have said no. But are you saying Chelsea came too soon?
Too early.
It's difficult, Richard, because it was very, very strange. Basically, we started well the season, and the guys were enjoying our football. I recall more or less near October, I recall Frank speaking in Chelsea TV saying how wonderful the football that we play and how open and a totally new style of training. We never played this way. But the problem for us was that we lost, or the players lost confidence in the process when we lost 3 games in a row. So we went to QPR and we had 2 guys sent off, JT and Drogba, and then we went home to Arsenal, lost 5-3. Then I think halfway we either lose, I think we lose to Liverpool in the Carling Cup. So the price of these 3 defeats in a row took the team out of their comfort level by playing this open football.
A lot was said at the time that maybe because you were such a young coach, that having so many big personalities was a problem. Was it?
No, it was not the personalities. Of course, people don't. There was a lot of speculation about my time over there. Yeah. I always spoke to Frank and JT whenever I left them out. Of course, they didn't like Odidier whenever Fernando played.
Brave man. Very brave man.
I told them. The problem was that, I didn't. I was not willing to adapt to Chelsea's old style.
Right.
And maybe that was my mistake.
Yeah.
And I wanted to play that football the way I wanted and the way I envisaged. And so when we lost confidence in the process, it was always very irregular. We would win and we would lose. We would win, lose. And this dynamic win-loss or win-draw was very, very painful. So it was a painful period at that time when we kept winning and losing. So we never found the stability of results that we needed. Then it was funny because we go to Mallorca for a winter training camp. We come back, we win against QPR for the cup. we win for the league. I can't remember against who. In this winter camp in Mallorca, we bonded together and things looked, you know, like the boat was ready to steady. Mm-hmm. And then we play Man United at home. We are winning 3-0 at halftime. And we end up losing, drawing 3-3 in Fergie time. So, yeah, I remember. This game killed me.
This game killed me.
Because it was Howard Webb, the referee. It was only the second time. It was something like strange. Like only the second time in history that the ref gives two penalties away.
Mm.
It was the same ref, Howard Webb, and to the same team, Man United.
Yes, there's a surprise. Oh, yes. Did he? What colour jersey was he wearing that day? Because since he retired, United have never been the same, have they?
So we went. It was 3-3. Then we go to Everton, we lose. We go to Napoli, we lose. I make some strong decisions with the team, and then it was it. It was one of those moments where people have to choose either the coach or the players, and it works in football.
Yeah.
As hard as it is, it does work. Sometimes these changes of season.
So you can be the adjudicator here, Andre, because Andy and I discussed last week Nagelsmann, and I said too young to be at that football club. Might not be. Were he elsewhere as he is now. Mm-hmm. But I said, I think that the dressing room, bearing in mind how powerful it is, will chew him up and spit him out. And I suppose I had you in mind at that time. Andy said not, that it'll be okay.
Different club, and Richard, different club. Totally different club.
You think he'll be okay?
So I think he'll be okay. First, he arrives there with a bit more experience, so more or less the same age as myself when I got to Chelsea. But with much more experience in professional football, so he's done 3 years or four in Leipzig and his years in Hoffenheim. So he arrives there with much more experience, and then it's a totally different structure. I mean, who doesn't want to work for the structure of Bayern with the power that they have, with the stability that they have?
Yeah.
So they have a sporting director. They have an assistant to the sporting director. They have the structure of Unes, Rummenigge. The board of Bayern. At that time in Chelsea, it wasn't like that. We were playing Stoke for the first game of the season. I remember this episode was a scandal to me. And the team manager, the great Gary Staker, comes to my office and he says to me, "Boss, we have to change the hotel in Stoke because we lost our reservation and we have to find a new one." So I said, "No problem. I mean, just go and check it out. If the hotel is good, it's no problem." No, boss. Not Norwich stayed in this hotel. He tells me that the hotel is very good and we're going to stay in this hotel. I said, "Gary, no, please. Yes, we are Chelsea. I mean, we cannot set the standards like Norwich. Of course, Norwich is a great club, but just go and check the hotel. I mean, go to Stoke and check the hotel." No, boss. No. And it went, guys, you don't believe, it went from Gary Staker to David Barnard to the CEO at that time, to the...
Kenyon, Peter Kenyon, I presume.
No, after Peter.
Was it? Okay, now that does me then. I can't think who that was. Bruce Buck? Was it Bruce?
Bruce Buck?
Was it Bruce? That early?
No, it didn't went to Bruce Buck.
Tannenbaum?
No.
It doesn't matter. Anyway, it went up the line and the decision...
So it went up the line, goes to Marina and said, "No, Andre, you have to calm down, please. No, it's the only hotel we have in Stoke. Just calm down, take it easy." And so, and this was a setting of standards for me that was a surprise.
Yeah.
So you are Chelsea, or who you are?
Yeah.
I mean, you are able to go to Hong Kong to check a 5-star hotel if we go in pre-season, but you're not able to go to Stoke because it's a 6-hour drive up north.
No, because it's Stoke.
Because it's cold and wet.
I think in terms of Chelsea guys, Chelsea has been extremely successful. The club is amazing. I take my responsibility. I was not able to make that team win. It's funny enough that the two teams that reached the Champions League final are precisely two teams that changed the coach during mid-season.
Absolutely.
From me for Roberto and Frank to Thomas, which is very unexpected. And teams that you don't, you were not expecting it. Mm. And, my Chelsea team was the lowest budget team in 15 years.
Yeah.
We did nothing in the market after Roberto spent 150 million. So,
it is
what it is.
Yeah, it is. Where were you more frustrated then, or where did you have more fun, at Chelsea or Tottenham?
Tottenham first year was very, very good.
72 points.
It was not easy with Daniel because we had. I'm not the simplest of guys to work with, but we had our ups and downs and we had a lot of fun in that first season, and we reached the end of the season and I was expecting to renew with Tottenham after having refused to go to Paris Saint-Germain, and the fact that. What I think was that Daniel was willing to sell me to Paris Saint-Germain because my clause was £15 million.
Oh, that's Daniel.
Rather than renewing me. So we started that second year in a bad animosity. Either way, we were very, very close to the top. We had more points when I reached an agreement to leave Tottenham than the season when we beat the record of points. But the environment was not there anymore. The connection wasn't there with me and with Daniel and with Franco. So it was also time to go.
Yes.
So, you're
not the only one. You won't be the last one. And your mate subsequently has also run into Daniel Levy and the various different ways that he wants to run a football club, Andre. So that story continues.
Richard, it all has to do with this extravagant leadership to take control of the clubs.
Yeah.
And we saw in the Super League, with the failure of the Super League, the effect of these extravagant ideas.
Yeah.
So basically, it's people that are business people that want to set up their businesses without any respect for what is around, which is emotions and love. Mm. And they take this decision. I mean, as surprising as it is, the foundation of the Super League, it's much more astonishing the fact that they have quit so soon.
Yes.
Yes.
They even haven't the balls to continue to hold up to challenge.
Yeah.
What is established? You understand?
Mm. Yeah.
So this was a surprise, also.
Mm.
This was a surprise. But it is what it is with this extravagant leadership. Yeah. I think in clubs that keep on happening.
Talking about them, Andre. When you're at Spurs and you know Daniel Levy has the reputation and you've got a team going well, you think, and he comes to you and says, "I'm selling our best player, Gareth Bale." Do you ever say in that? What was your thoughts? Did you try and tell him no? Did you have to just say sorry? Okay.
No, with Luca was very simple. Daniel told me straightforward that he was going to Real.
Yeah.
And I told Daniel, no problem, but I want him replaced by Moutinho. And Daniel takes the Moutinho deal till the last day of the transfer market.
Of course he does.
and we failed the deal.
There you go.
So that was that. With Gareth. Gareth at 100 million, I think it was sensible to sell.
Yeah,
because it is. What was funny was that the offer from United was 120 million, and then Gareth chose to go to Real Madrid.
I think he probably made a good choice, in fairness. But what's probably more interesting, if you can share that with us. Is who was buying the replacements? Was it 5, 6, or 7 that were bought?
Yeah, I mean at that time was we had agreed together that the club needed the figure of a sporting director and it was more or less in agreement in between us to have Franco come in. So Franco was doing his market. Of course, he asked me my opinion. I could validate or not.
Okay.
we ended up doing the market that we did with successes and failures.
Yeah, it was busy.
Yeah, it was busy.
Yeah, I mean, we had to be. It was busy because we had to be. We had a team to rebuild.
Yeah.
But you can't say that a few worked, a few others did.
Your tone of voice tells me that there was a lot going on that you perhaps did not have much say in. So we'll leave it there, Andre. I mentioned earlier, China or Russia? Which of the two did you have, again, more fun with?
No, I had, in Russia, I found my love for coaching once again. Because good. I came out of good. England and England for me wasn't training sessions, wasn't preparing a game. England for me was putting down fires all the time.
Yeah.
Fires with agents, fires with Daniel, and handling of the media. It was just too much. And you lose the interest for what is the essence of the game, which is coaching and teaching your players and making your players learn. And I lost the love there for the game, and I found it once again in Russia, and I had a wonderful time there, and the club was amazing, the structure was good. We went into financial fair play because of the buyings of Hulk and the Witzel by Zenit a few years back, so we had to be sensible in the market. We managed to do the right players. And I had, I found my stability. So I have a great relationship with that club. It was also a chance for me to be close to Champions League football.
Yeah.
And the difficulty in Russia is that you have that winter break. And the first game after a winter break that you have, it is the Champions League.
Yeah.
So we always reach that game in very, very difficult conditions. In the Europa League we went through in the last 32, we went all the way to the quarterfinal, and then dropped out with Sevilla in my first year, and then in the second year we played Benfica in the last 16, and we were knocked out also. So we always reach this game not in top condition.
Yeah.
And this was a pity because you always get invited to this UEFA club, UEFA elite club coaches forum.
Yeah.
And I used to tell them over there, give the Russian clubs or the clubs from the East the second week of return or the second week of games. Mm. Don't put them in the first week of games. Because you can have that slot where you play 1 week later.
Yeah.
But they would never listen, and we would always end up in the first week of games for the UEFA competitions, and it was hard. It's hard for Russian teams. But it was St. Petersburg is an amazing city.
Yeah. Mm.
And there I found my stability.
Good. And China? Did you enjoy China?
China was very good. Very good. I mean, Evergrande, Guangzhou Evergrande were the champions for 6 years. And Shanghai was investing to become champions. So they were here in Porto. They were, of course, I mean, the economic offer was extraordinary and was something that I couldn't refuse. But they were willing also to invest. So we got Oscar from Chelsea.
Chelsea, yeah, yeah.
We got Ricardo Carvalho out from retirement. We bought an Uzbekistan player that I knew from Russia, Akhmedov. And we started putting the piece, and we had, of course, Hulk already there that had been my player in Zenit. And we started putting the pieces together, but what happened? Guangzhou Evergrande, they pressure the Chinese FA, and the Chinese FA 2 weeks before the league starts changes the rule of the limit of foreign players. So what happened? This was the extraordinary thing. I mean, Ricardo now is my assistant coach. But at that time, I took Ricardo to Shanghai and never played. So my argument was, you have a guy here that has won Champions League in Chelsea and Real Madrid. Yeah. He is European champion with Portugal. And the Chinese FA is limiting the foreigners when you can have this type of player teaching the young formation, teaching the young, the youth development of the Chinese player.
What a chance missed.
So it was a difficulty, difficult. What happened to us? I mean, we went to the Chinese final. We lost, finished second in the league, went to the Champions League final. We lost. It was we were there close to every objective, but we weren't able to get it. That year was great for the family. They have great memories from China. It was a good experience. The problem was I got suspended by the Chinese FA for 8 games.
Why?
So even if I go back to China now, I'm still suspended. So I have still four more games to of suspension if I go back to China.
Have you served your ban in France, or is that still current?
Something very familiar here.
I must say, Andre, it's been a delight, and it's really good to hear you laughing, because I don't think we saw enough of that side of you when you were working in the Premier League. I hope we haven't seen the last of you.
No.
Were the right offer to come, would you come back? Would you fancy it again?
No, really, Richard and Andy, I've always set up 15 years for my career as a coach. I'm now on my 11th year. I have other ambitions in the game. Hopefully, one day I'll be able to run for the election of Porto. So Porto is a club where the president gets elected.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. All right.
So,
okay.
The club owns the business part of the club is 49%. The club is 51%. Mm. So you get elected to the club, and I hope to run to this election.
Well, I hope you're going to give up rallying.
I was
it's far
say,
too dangerous.
Are you still crashing rally cars?
I'm still testing. Whenever I can, I'm into motor racing. With me, and I don't like to sell stories. In my time I'm here investing in, I'm seeing other teams and all this blah blah that people speak about. Whenever I have free time, I dedicate myself to my passions, and my passions are motor racing. So I'm gonna enlist in the Rally of Portugal with a team, but also it's a good stepping stone for my foundation. I've created I've been able to create my foundation right now. My foundation is called Race for Good, and Race for Good hopefully is going to become being able to raise more and more money for disabled children and children in Africa.
Fantastic. Great.
Which is basically the institutions that I'm a patron of. So hopefully that with the Rally of Portugal and its visibility, it can be a good stepping stone for.
Well, we wish you well. Please,
yes, we do.
Don't be a stranger, Andre. And thank you. You've been very generous with your time for us, and we genuinely appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks, Andre.
Thanks. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Andre.
You.
Look after yourself.
It's good to hear. You remember when you two were in the commentating in TV, the Blackburn winning team.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
Oh, God. Those were amazing days.
They were wonderful days.
Wonderful days.
It'll never be the same, Andre. No. I don't care what they say. Those days were very, very special. They really were.
Those were the days.
Those were.
It was a good time. Bobby used to go to Porto Cricket Club. Just around the corner from where we lived. Then we used to sit down watching Sky, because the Porto Cricket Club had the membership to Sky, and we used to see Blackburn play all the time.
And I have to say, Andre, to this day, still one of my favourites, Bob. I mean, he was a lovely, lovely man. I don't know what he was like to work for, but to keep the company of, special, really special guy. Really special.
Really special person. Yeah.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Look
Thank
after
you.
Yourself.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
Thank you,
Andre.
See you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow.
Mm.
I didn't think we'd spend that much time. We are way beyond that which we normally record, yes. But I actually could have spent all day with him, couldn't you?
Well, there was much else we could have talked about. We kind of skipped over the last bit. But he was sensational. Obviously, we had met him here a few years ago when he came to Qatar to join us at BN Sports for a weekend. But we never really, and that's the first in-depth conversation we've had with him. And I thought it was great. You were right. It's great to hear him laughing and having a joke. And the stories about sitting in the back of the car with Bobby Robson and Josie Mourinho as a 17, 18-year-old.
Just remarkable. And then the one that I'm really touched by is the fact that they went round to the cricket club.
Yes, to watch us on Sky.
Oh, wow. Different. Well, again, thank you, Andre. And yeah. If he's got 4 years left of his career, I hope he enjoys it.
Well, he's obviously a man who meticulously has planned his career and has said, you know, I'd be interested to see if that changed, you know, with the next job he gets, or whether he will say after 15 years, enough is enough, I've got other things to do. He seems very keen on his foundation and his racing. That he loves to do. So we shall see. We'll keep an eye on that, definitely. But it was terrific.
Alexa. Oh, no.
It's not in. I've told you about Alexa.
It's time to go time. You can get in touch.
If you walk in a shop and you shout, Alexa.
I bet they all go off, don't they?
All go, oh, what?
Morning, Andy.
I'm going to try it.
You can get in touch on Insta and Twitter at Keys and Grey Pod. Keys, A-N-D, Keys and Grey Pod. Thank you for your company, and as I always say, now you've found us, tell your mates where we are.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.